Final hour of the Rob Brown Radio Program goes now. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Spectacular to have you. Yeah. Wrapping up the show today. Want to be a part of it? 844-326-3663 is the number to jump on board. Have you heard this bit of a controversy going on about Michael Jordan? No, I know. It's never happened before. In 1987-1988, Michael Jordan became the first player ever to win the scoring title and Defensive Player of the Year in the same season. Not only the first player ever, to this day, the only player ever to do that. Never before has anything been worth more of a whoa than that. The 25-year-old at the time, drafted by the Chicago Bulls 40 years ago this week, he had kind of at that point, the biggest criticism of MJ was that he had been too focused on scoring points. He had been too much of a scorer, was not playing defense, and a lot of folks were busting it up for it costing his team wins at the time. Jordan led the NBA in scoring the previous season, but they got swept out of the playoffs in the first round by the Boston Celtics for the second year in a row. Jordan was labeled an elite scorer, but not a winner. What did Jordan do? He came out the next year and he won the Defensive Player of the Year award. Not only did it legitimize Michael Jordan as an all-around basketball player, but it was kind of the moment where a lot of basketball fans realized this dude is going to be really good. Like, really good for a really long time. But here's what's interesting. There's an article up on Yahoo Sports written by Tom Haberstroh that claims that, and I quote, considerable evidence, both statistical and corroborating video, suggests that Jordan's Defensive Player of the Year award may not be as valid as has been previously thought. He writes, quote, a closer look at Jordan's 87-88 season reveals a substantial discrepancy between his home and road statistics, raising questions about the authenticity of his off-the-chart steals and blocks numbers that season and shining a light on an era that seemed particularly vulnerable to the hidden hand of Homer bias. He goes on to write that Michael Jordan was consumed with winning, down to the fact that he would change every element of his game if he believed that it was to get there. And that one of the things that marked the early years of Michael Jordan was an obsession with being known and becoming a great defender. Haberstroh writes, quote, it wasn't enough to be a great defender. He almost certainly was. He wanted to be known as a great defender. The man behind the "and I took it personally" meme was consumed by his detractors. No slight too small to turn into redemptive fuel.
Why would you go look for this? Just out of the blue decide, you know what? I'm going to go way back here and look at this and see if I can disprove this.
Because there is nothing that we love more than kicking people off a pedestal, except kicking people off a pedestal and finding out that it's true that they deserve to be kicked off the pedestal. I mean, I don't think it is.
No, I have a conspiracy. I have a conspiracy that this guy's a LeBron guy. Because he's going to get blamed for being LeBron guy, trying to go back and discredit Jordan for things to make LeBron look better. Because the people who love Jordan and always accuse LeBron people of doing stuff to make it's he's a LeBron guy. I'm curious to see who he roots for.
I don't think that a theory or a thought or an idea from someone should immediately be discredited or disqualified based on their affiliation, be it sports or science or philosophy or anything else. It should be discredited based solely on the numbers, the evidence that they bring to the table.
Right, but people still do that. And a bunch of people still do that. You don't think it's weird that this guy decides, you know what? I think I'll go back and look at Jordan from this year. What caused him to go back and do that? I'm curious about the motivation this many years later that would cause him to go back and look at it.
For the record, again, I don't care. This guy might be the biological son of LeBron James. I don't care. If his point is accurate, his point is accurate, right? If his point is valid, his point is valid.
I agree. But I just would still like to know what the motivation is. What did someone just say it in passing? You know, he was at a sports bar and so, you know, Jordan's stats back then, I think they were padded. And he went, oh, you know what? I think I'm an investigative reporter. I think I'll just check.
Maybe so. And maybe again, maybe he is the unknown adopted son of LeBron. And this is just to pump Bron's numbers up. Again, that's irrelevant. I mean, it's a curiosity. It's interesting for sure. But what was found out is more important than why it was found out. Now, he does write where this stemmed from, at least the conversation itself. He talks about an NBA stat keeper who apparently kind of blew the whistle on the fact that in the late 80s and early 90s, home scorekeepers, according to this person, home scorekeepers would frequently be hired by teams, and a lot of them were hired because they were willing to juice the stats. This is one thing that happens in baseball all the time. For instance, the difference between a hit and an error in baseball is very frequently what the scorekeeper thinks it is. That's it. The scorekeeper may look at a shot hit between second base and shortstop and decide that, you know, it tipped the glove of that player, but it was also an unreasonable expectation he would make the catch, so therefore it's a hit. Versus another guy who would go, he got a glove on it. If you get a glove on it, you got to knock it down. That's an error. That's a fielding error. He reached on a fielding error. And that can change. That can absolutely start or end hitting streaks for guys. And it's based on the decision of one guy. So, in the conversation, a former administrator turned stat keeper for the Vancouver Grizzlies, he went on an episode of Pablo Torre Finds Out, which is Pablo Torre's podcast, and it's relatively entertaining. He said that in his view, inflating certain box score statistics for the home team was at the time, common NBA-wide occurrence. Landed the Vancouver job in 1995, says he traveled to Detroit for a training session attended by other NBA professional scorekeepers who had held their positions for a number of years. Rucker was just 19 years old while working for the expansion Vancouver franchise, the new kid on the block, eager to prove he could score a game as accurately as anyone in the room. He said then they reviewed a video clip of John Stockton getting an assist on a Karl Malone bucket and things got weird. He said, quote, there was no casual connection between the pass and the basket, and the majority opinion by Amile was, oh, that's definitely not an assist. But according to Rucker, the scorekeepers told him in no uncertain terms that it was an assist because it was John Stockton. Rucker said he soon realized that that was what was expected. In Rucker's view, it was inferred that part of the scorekeeper's job was to give the hometown stars the star treatment. Rucker told Pablo Torre, quote, I left there clearly understanding that, yes, we are supposed to present the most accurate representation that we can, but the NBA is also an entertainment business, and it's up to me in a very small part as statisticians to support or reinforce stars and excitement and fun. And that message was definitely reinforced internally with the Grizzlies. When reached by Yahoo Sports, the league office declined to comment on Rucker's assertions. The Grizzlies, who moved to Memphis in 2001, declined comment for the story. Rucker explained that from his experience, subjective stats, primarily block steals and assists and sometimes rebounds, were a way to give star treatment. If a player tried to block a shot and the ball fell short, maybe give them the benefit of the doubt on a 50-50 play, block. If a pass was deflected by one defender and recovered by another, choose wisely as to which defender to award the steal. Assists were a thing of beauty left to the eye of the beholder. To Rucker, it was an unspoken part of the NBA's marketing machine, a way to get on SportsCenter in front of a national audience to grab attention. Then the author went ahead and applied this to the Jordan era. He writes, quote, in the Jordan era, media members weren't able to put the microscope on home road disparities, whether it was for Jordan or other star players. In the late 80s, there was no internet, no social media pressure to get things right, no public system of accountability. The shadow looms large. If blocks and steals were heavily influenced by a hidden homer bias, the implications on the historical record can be significant. The damage of assist fudging, for instance, has a limited scope since there is no league-wide award given to the NBA's best passer. However, the ripple effect of questionable block and steal accounting can create a reputational sea change between Defensive Player of the Year awards as they are heavily influenced by those same statistics. He then goes on to point out the discrepancies in the Jordan era. He says that during Jordan's Homer era, Jordan averaged 4 steals and 2.1 blocks per game. But on the road, those numbers were 2 steals and 1 block per game. So basically, the stats were doubled at home compared to on the road. He says, to account for possible uneven playing time effects, we can look at per 36-minute numbers for a truer portrayal of the phenomenon. Jordan's combined block and steals number were 82% higher at home than on the road. So when you shrink it to the 36 number, to the per 36 number, that number goes to 82% higher at home. 5.5 stocks, steals plus blocks per 36 minutes than on the road where he got 3. He said it's not unusual for the NBA's top defender to exhibit a slight home road disparity. It's common knowledge that players perform better at home in front of friendly confines, but the size of the 87-88 gap is unprecedented and unequaled. Since that point, he said no other instance in the awards history has a player shown a disparity that touched the total 160% between home and away, with the exception of Jordan's 87-88 season, where he clocked in at a 182% disparity. For the sake of comparison, he went on to put the per 36 steal and block number down between some other players. The biggest discrepancies, 182% for Mike Jordan, 88-89, Mark Eaton, 159, Alvin Robertson, 153 in 85-86, Big Ben Wallace in 04 and 05 had a 153%, Jaren Jackson Jr. 2 years ago, 150, Sidney Moncrief in 83-84, 136, Big Ben Wallace in 05-06, 135, Dennis the Worm Rodman in 89-90 had a 130, so did Big Ben Wallace in 02-03. So basically what this author is claiming here is that if you look at the discrepancy between steals in terms of and blocks in terms of Jordan and everybody else, he's saying Chicago basically fudged the numbers to give Jordan this award because it was his goal that season. He points out specifically the steal numbers in the 87-88 year. This is wild. There were 4 players in the NBA who had more steals at home than on the road. None of them were anywhere close, or excuse me, more steals at home than on the road. None of them had close to the number of steals at home. Alvin Robertson had 98 steals on the road, more than Jordan's 94. John Stockton had 105, more than Jordan's 94. Fat Lever is a player whose name I had never heard before right now. Maybe I'm a bad NBA fan.
You don't know Fat.
I don't know Fat. And now I have
not,
to go.
Not with, anymore, you don't.
Oh, his first name was Lafayette. Lafayette, okay. Fat Lever played
missed,
in the.
You missed what I did there. I was just, you know.
You really, never mind. I was going to make a Lever joke there too.
No, well, I mean, I was trying to help you. I mean, because it's working and you look good and, you know, I just, you know.
He had 106 steals at home that year, more than 94 Jordan steals on the road. But Robertson had 145 steals at home. Stockton had 137. Lever had 116. Jordan had 165. And he made the play that if you go look at the video, there's a lot of spots where it is pretty much a guarantee that home court statisticians and scorekeepers were giving Jordan credit for steals that were not Jordan steals.
Okay, you know, I get you want to be accurate, but what does this do? I mean, so this puts into question a lot of stats from throughout history, at least in basketball. So should he go back and check every single player from every single season before the internet?
I am a big believer in I would rather know what's true than what's comforting. I would rather know what's true than what I believe, right? And when you are talking about legacies, because in order for Jordan to have this legacy of the GOAT, everybody else that Jordan played beside has to take all their career achievements and accomplishments and have them put in the shadows. They've got to go behind for Jordan to come to the forefront. And I appreciate the eras of players. This is, again, going back to my talk about the Negro Leagues a couple of weeks ago when they added them to the Major League records, right? I would rather have guys that did incredible things recognized than have people who were on the leaderboard stay on the leaderboard just because that's tradition. And while, yeah, I told somebody the other day, Lonzo, in my closet right now, I'm a big jersey guy, but I'm not a big basketball jersey guy because I'm a flabby out of shape, but slightly flabby than before, but flabby out of shape white guy. So there's no spot where Rob Brown's going in public sleeveless unless I'm holding on to a Bahama Mama at the time, right? I don't have a lot of basketball jerseys. And the ones that I do have, I primarily have because I either have them as a decoration or because they have sentimental value. I own, I think, 5 basketball jerseys right now. I have a Washington Generals jersey. They're the bad guys that play the Harlem Globetrotters all the time because I no team has ever gotten their asses kicked more than the Washington Generals. And I also think it's a great name. I have a Looney Tunes, Toon Squad, Bill Murray jersey.
Yeah, I was waiting because I knew there had to be a Toon Squad in there somewhere.
I have a Toon Squad, Bill Murray jersey. And then I have 3 NBA jerseys. I have a Chris Paul jersey from the Hornets when they were the New Orleans Hornets. I have a Dirk Nowitzki jersey from the Mavs because Dirk was my favorite player at the time and somebody gifted it to me. And I have a red Chicago Bulls Michael Jordan jersey that my old man brought me back from Chicago because I loved Michael Jordan. But at the same time, I do think that it is important that we recognize the accomplishments of everybody. And if we really do see that Jordan's first Defensive Player of the Year award, which is, again, to me, that was the award that started the rise of Michael Jordan from a really good basketball player to the basketball player. I don't care where you go. If you go, who's the basketball? Just the basketball player. What percentage of guys are going to say Michael Jordan? 85%, 90% are going to say Mike. That number might go down a little bit when you get to the kids who grew up with Kobe. Maybe down a little bit more when you get to the kids that grew up with LeBron. But anybody older than, say, 30, 90% of the time you're going to get Mike Jordan. And if that is true, and this award was handed out not because Mike was the best defender, but because he was getting inflated stats handed to him, then I think it's important that we talk about it so that other great defensive players like Lafayette Fat Lever make their way into the history books as well. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back after this. Texture said, wow, never would have thought the millennials and their cancel culture would have come after the GOAT, but here we are. Next up, Leo Messi. Never coming after Leo Messi. That's a really good text, Texter. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. You gotta watch the stream, all right? Facebook.com/TheFanUpstate, Twitter.com/TheFanUpstate, The Fan Upstate on YouTube, The Rob Brown Show on YouTube, or The Rob Brown Show on Twitch. All the different ways to watch the live stream. We go live and we stay live all 4 hours every single day. Make sure you join us on the live stream, won't you?
And it's a different show on all those channels.
It is.
It's not the same show on, it's different on all of them.
But you can only watch one at a time.
That's right.
All right.
But after you watch one, you should go back and watch the stream on the other one and see if you can find the differences. They're subtle, but they're there.
Texter said, if Chicago's scores were giving him slack, all the other teams could have been shorting him. If the discrepancy had been so blatant, why weren't other players screaming that at the time? Well, number one, I don't know that they were, because I do have to say, as a caveat to this conversation, I was three.
Yeah, I don't recall an outcry saying, oh, you're padding the stats for Jordan. I do not recall that. But again, no internet, so the only way you would have been able to find it out is on TV, radio, or newspaper.
Right. You would have had to watch the game, then grabbed the paper the next day, then evaluated the box score. You would have had to VHS record the game to go back and check the numbers. But I would also say that, and again, this is one of the things that is written about in this article. The other aspect of it is that's just how it was, right? And how many things do we rail about today?
That's just the way it is.
That today are unacceptable, but that's just the way it was back in the day. And we look now and we go, yeah, no, just because that's the way it was doesn't mean that that is the way it is or should be today. I think that is a large part of it, is because it is. I think a lot of people look at it. And I could be wrong about this. I'll say this and then I'll shut up because I want to hear your thoughts on it. But I think a lot of people, especially people who grew up in, and I am one of the people who grew up in the prime of the Jordan era, but I think this is one of those times that a lot of people become sycophantic towards a figure from their developmental years, right? Like we have our heroes, and because we have them up on a pedestal, any criticism or discussion about that person, no matter how good faith that might be, feels more like an attack than it does a discussion, right? Like, I don't think it is an attack on Michael Jordan to say that stat padding by home scorekeepers may have influenced the legacy of not just Michael Jordan, but really the league as a whole, the way we look at different players, including Michael Jordan. Stat padding has changed that, and I think it's important to recognize it, is not the same as saying, Michael Jordan sucks. It's not the same thing. It's an entirely different thing.
Well, it's just, but again, it's just, I don't want to say it's petty, because I guess if you want to go back and prove that an entire era was nothing but padded stats, you pick the guy who was the most famous guy from that era and point out it was done to him, and then probably a little bit less than others. There's only a couple sports, period, pro or otherwise, where you can't really do that. You can't hide, you can't get hometown. So can you do that in baseball? You can't.
You absolutely can. Like I said earlier, because hits and errors are determined by a scorekeeper. I'll give you the perfect example. Cal Ripken Jr., the Iron Man streak, right? Played 17 million games, never missing one. But
at least 17 million. Yeah.
There are a lot of people who believe, and there is some limited evidence to back this up. There are a lot of people who believe that the Orioles would cancel games or postpone games or twist things at points where Cal Ripken may have been too dinged up to play a game in order to keep that streak alive, right? Like folks up in New York love to say that Baltimore would go outside, spit in the air, and claim it's raining so that they could put a rain delay on so that Cal wouldn't miss a game because he had a bruised foot or whatever, right? There's a lot of people that believe that, and again, the reason this is not as talked about is because this man that wrote this article, the folks that put this thing together, these folks, as the kids say, brought receipts, right? The folks who claim that Baltimore would force a rain delay or would say that a game was unplayable for some reason or would delay a game so that Cal would be available when he might not otherwise in order to keep the consecutive games played streak alive. Again, you got to bring receipts to the table if you want teams, if you want people to believe it. This dude who wrote this article brought receipts to the table. And if you don't believe him, you can go look. Like, he, in this article, I thought that this was very cool. And I got to tell you, as a giganto nerd, I'm probably going to do this. This guy put on his, in his article, six games from 87 and 88. Atlanta at Chicago, November 20th, 87. Indiana at Chicago, Jan 5, 88. Denver at Chicago, Detroit at Chicago, Atlanta, Chicago, Boston at Chicago from January, February, and March of 1988. He put six tapes together, including a link that you can click on to go bring up the stat sheet from that game. So, for instance, Atlanta at Chicago, November 20th, 1987. In fact, I'll even use what he lists. He points out a game, Atlanta at Chicago, from February 15th, 1988. And he includes the box score in it. He says, the official box score indicates the Atlanta Hawks registered 10 turnovers and the Chicago Bulls tallied 10 steals. That detail immediately grabbed our attention. Turnovers fall into two categories, live ball and dead ball turnovers. By rule, dead ball turnovers cannot be steals. For example, if Atlanta's Kevin Willis traveled on a play, a steal could not be credited to a Bulls defender. Only live ball turnovers, intercepted passes, recovered loose balls, etc., can be assigned to a defensive player for a steal. The more live ball turnovers in a game, the more steals in a game. The Bulls having 10 steals on 10 Hawks turnovers meant that none of the Hawks turnovers could have been dead ball turnovers. No travels, no offensive fouls, no ball tossed out of bounds, no 24-second violations. And he says, for an entire game, could that even be possible? Forget, did it happen? Could it even be possible? Is that even a real, could the team have no travels, no turnovers that were dead ball, no whatever, no dribbling out of bounds, no shot. Could a team have none of them? He said, we compared notes again. We both saw only two legitimate steals by Michael Jordan. The box score credited him with five, in excess of three steals. He said, to be precise, we saw two Jordan steals at best, but possibly only one when he poked the ball, chased it down, and saved it from going OB before throwing it directly to the Hawks for a turnover. The other play, a transition deflection by Jordan's teammate Mike Brown that was recovered by Jordan, could have been credited either way. They gave it to Jordan. He said there were three steals completely unaccounted for and unaccountable in that game.
All right. All of that is an amazing lot of things for you to read. But in the end, Jordan's still amazing. They won the games. None of those stat padding affected the outcome of the game. So I don't understand the benefit of going back and doing this.
Okay.
Unless you're wanting to tarnish the legacy of someone.
No. See, this is exactly what I'm talking about. The only reason to do this is attack Mike. That's untrue. That's completely untrue. I've already given you two reasons to do it. Neither of them were attacking Mike. One of them is to know what's true. Michael Jordan ended that season with 196 steals. He's down to 193 in one paragraph, right? Now, let's extrapolate that across 80-plus games. You are talking about 100 possible steals, if not more, that Mike didn't have. Even if I go 41 games at the house at three steals a game, that's 120 possible steals if we extrapolate that number. I want to know what's true, not people think is true. Number two, I think in doing this, you start handing credit to other guys that may have had more steals, may have had more blocks, may have had more this, may have had more that, and other guys whose names have been pushed into the background because Mike got box score padded is important. But also number three, I do think there is an element of when people get into the Jordan Braun debate, one of the first things they bring up is what? Well, Jordan won Defensive Player of the Year this many times. But did he though? So there is some accuracy to to tarnish Mike's legacy. But there's also accuracy in, I want to know what's true, not what people think. And those are different things. This has nothing to do with attacking Mike. Unless it does. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show back on the radio. It is the Fan Upstate.
I just want to say Lola Bunny was hot, but she was no Jessica Rabbit.
Listen. I think all of us, you know what? Let's just get weird. It's Friday. Who the hell cares, right? I think.
And even if they do care.
It doesn't matter anymore. Yeah. We did this for 4.5 years at this point. Lonzo and I for 3.5 years at this point. It just is what it is now. All of us had, I don't care your age. I think all of us had, that woman that made something awaken in you as a young man. All right.
You're talking about your need for love.
No, I'm not.
So you're about to be graphic. I think you can talk about, wow.
You know what I mean.
Wow, we do now.
You know what I mean. I think all of us had that woman that for the first time you went, something interesting is happening. And for a lot of y'all.
If you heard that voice when something interesting happened, you definitely are a major nerd. I'm just, not that there's anything wrong with that, but.
The Force Awakens, it does.
Oh, please.
And for a disturbing number of y'all, that woman was animated, okay? The obsession on the internet with Lola Bunny from Toon Squad, from Space Jam, is alarming, at the least. Jessica Rabbit's totally understandable, though. All right? She's not bad. She's just drawn that way.
She was just drawn that way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Can we be straight up, though? Jessica Rabbit was straight up top-notch wife material, right? Like, all the temptation in the world, and she never stopped fighting for Roger Rabbit. Never stopped going to bat for her husband, Raj.
All right, Steven, on the stream.
Betty Boop.
It's Boop.
Yeah, not Betty Boop.
That's not. Yeah, that's not.
Betty Boop.
Maybe you've always thought it was that, but it's not that.
Betty Boop.
I hope that was autocorrect, which makes it even funnier, but you know.
All right. We talked about that baseball game earlier because I've come to the realization that even though I thought that conversation could go way out of left field, as soon as I brought up Jessica Rabbit, I'm like, no, this is going to get even too weird for this show. All right. And this show gets weird all the time.
It's not too weird. I guess you've never seen the animated movie back in the day, Heavy Metal.
I did not, but I saw the South Park parody of it, and I can get the gist.
Okay.
I can get the gist. All right. Like, again. For a lot of the straight fellas out there, there was a woman who awoke that side of you at some point.
Well, you're just strictly talking animated right now, though.
No. I think for a lot of guys, there probably was that woman that for the first time awoke something in you.
Come on, Tommy. It's not Wilma. It's Betty, man. I know the redhead. I get it.
Yeah, Betty Rubble.
Yeah, but Betty, I mean.
Barney outkicked his coverage by a million miles. So did Fred. Both of those cats outkicked their coverage by a million miles. But Betty Rubble was the better of the two.
Because she had the sexier voice. I'm just saying.
For sure. Yeah. And listen, it has been made no secret that, like, in his history, Rob's had a history of redheads. All right. But Betty Rubble was the play betwixt those two. I think everybody had that woman that, like, made the Force awaken for the first time. And for a lot of y'all, it was somebody that was animated. Jessica Rabbit, Lola Bunny, you know, add your Tinkerbell, all right? I'm not going to lie. Rob Brown loved him some Tinkerbell.
You guys are weird with the Tinkerbell thing.
How is that weird?
It just is. She's like 2 inches tall.
I know. But then Julia Roberts made her not 2 inches tall.
Yeah, but see, we were just talking.
And a whole lot of us were like.
Talking about animated. Now you're switching from animated.
No, I'm not talking about animated. I am saying that.
The whole conversation stemmed from animated.
No. The conversation stemmed from.
You can change it if you
want. No, I'm not.
Your name's on the show.
The conversation started with a lot of us had that woman that did that thing to us for the first time.
And then we just talked about animated.
Though. And for an alarming number of American men, that first woman was animated. Not exclusively, all right? Not exclusively. It may have been Pam Anderson on the Baywatch poster that did it for you the first time. I'm blanking on her name. What was the chick that everybody, Farrah Fawcett, may have done it for a lot of
you're
y'all.
You're blank because you weren't alive then.
Farrah Fawcett was pre my time, but I'm going to
tell you. Charlie's Angels, yes.
Ladies, if y'all would like to bring back the winged, fluffed haircut.
I did like the hair.
I'm on board.
I did.
All right?
I'm
on board.
The hair.
What's the other chick that was on the poster? Princess Leia did it for like an entire generation of men back in the 70s. Young men back in the 70s.
You're into short girls, yeah.
Hey, whatever. All right, whatever you're into. The first time Princess Leia showed up on a screen in space with no underoos, a lot of y'all had The Force Awakened for the first time. Sorry to keep going back to that phrase, but it's obviously very appropriate here.
No, you're so glad that you coined it.
I really
and now
am.
You just want to say
really
as many am. Times as you can.
I really am. Keegan said the mechanic chick and the princess from Journey to Atlantis, the animated movie. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I saw that.
What's the chick's name from El Dorado? Y'all know what I'm talking about.
All right.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. I can't remember her name. But the chick from El Dorado, Shell did it for a lot. Like, there's generations of these animated chicks.
Now
that,
you're
like,
gonna throw in like Pocahontas and
I mean, I'm gonna tell you, weird one for me, Belle. You telling me?
Yeah, because she's a
huge dork.
Yeah, intelligent, all those things for sure.
Yeah,
I agree.
All right, so don't tell me I'm alone in this. I know I'm not. I know I'm not. Because if it wasn't true, they wouldn't keep making animated chicks hot for 1,000 years. And they have since the inception of animation.
Jasmine from Aladdin.
Yes.
I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T.
Like, yeah, absolutely. Right? They wouldn't keep doing it. If it didn't work, there was no need in a children's movie to put Jasmine in a belly shirt. They did it for a reason, and it ain't because of the kids.
Well, because, you know, it was the fashion of the day and the place where they were, but she seemed to be one of the only people.
Yes, because we know Disney is super authentic to the history of the stories, mm-hmm. for sure, which is why they made Pocahontas 9 years old in that movie.
She was not 9 years
old. She was like 9 to 10 years old when she met John Smith. Absolutely. That's part of the reason that a lot of people were mad about the movie. It's like, that's not really how it went, my guys, right? But that's not how we roll. So the point here is, it's weird. I acknowledge it's weird, but it ain't uncommon, or else they'd stop doing it.
All right, Sleeping Beauty, not bad.
Yeah, but also when that movie dropped, it was a little different. You couldn't really have a chick in a belly shirt.
How about Ariel?
Ain't no reason for her to be wearing C cups. See what I did there? C-S-E-A cups?
Okay. S-E-A cups? They were actually C-shells.
Right, but they were C cups in that movie.
Well, I guess.
Get it?
I guess.
Get it?
If you look at it from that point of view, I suppose.
But yes, you are correct. Absolutely no need to go that hard in the paint on the animation style. And I know a lot of people are going, Rob, you absolute bleeping weirdo. And that is fine, but I'm not wrong. That's why Jessica Rabbit looked like Jessica Rabbit. That is why in 2024... When that movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit came out in what year, Alonzo? 1991? Two? Apparently 88. I'm older than I thought. In 1988, when that movie came out, it is 2024, and y'all still didn't exactly know who the hell Jessica Rabbit is. And it ain't because Who Framed Roger Rabbit is up there with Tombstone on the most rewatched movies.
It was it was groundbreaking animation because there was live action.
And Christopher Lloyd was terrifying in that movie.
He was, especially when you found out
that poor shoe.
Yeah, it was not good.
That movie was so good, I felt bad for an animated shoe. That's how good that movie was, all right? But still, 1988, the same year that Michael Jordan was unjustifiably awarded Defensive Player of the Year in the NBA, hashtag callback, hashtag wow. I'm good at this.
Look at how he tied that in. That was awesome.
And y'all still know who Jessica Rabbit is, for a reason. Texas says, the girl from Hercules. Her name would be Megara, and you're damn right. You're second to Belle, in my, actually maybe above Belle. On the Rob Brown list of animated women.
She was kind of a bad girl.
She was a complete badass in that movie, right? And then eventually, she fell in love. No way, no how, I won't say I'm in love. Banger of a Disney song. Underrated, underappreciated. Should be on your playlist on Spotify. And that was the moment that it's like, yo, if you get a good bad girl, you have won the game, my man. Megara. Way up there, for sure. My point is, as a youngster, we all had, and I'm going even back, even y'all, old heads, I know you're listening, and I know you're like, this kid's a weirdo, get him the hell off my radio, but do not lie to me. There was a Betty Boop back in your day.
Boop.
Thanks, Steven. I'm never going to not see that. There was a Betty Boop back in your day that came on your television screen back when, like, the remote was like a dial on the TV, right? That you looked at and little something changed in your mind. A little something changed in your brain. You know it's true. You know I'm right. Don't be shocked if Jessica Rabbit's trending tomorrow.
Hey, I'm starring that as my favorite segment of the day. All right. What the X is going on with the Pat McAfee show, Rob? Are they all dead? Is it the AJ show now? As people are speculating, because AJ wasn't there, you know, he's live from Ohio and stream.
Can I tell you how much I love this? For those of you that know what's going on, if you're not a wrestling fan, this is going to get lost on you. If you're not a wrestling fan, deal with it for like 60 more seconds.
If you're not one, you should be.
No, still listen. Yeah, but so yesterday Pat McAfee's doing a show, but he's interviewing like a former Navy SEAL who won like the Navy Cross and a real legit American hero. And then, though they never showed it, it was implied that the Wyatt Six showed up and took over because they did the like the power going. Because we all know when you turn a light switch off, you hear it go.
They were, here's the thing, they were talking about it earlier in the show.
Sure.
Because I saw them talking about it and you know, they clip in clips. So I saw that clip and I was like, oh, okay. And they were really, really talking in depth for like 10 minutes about it. And then this happened.
Yeah. And of course, again, as you know, when you turn the power off, it goes.
That's how around here for sure.
Yeah, like I went the other day and I turned the circuit breaker off to the entire house just to see if it made that sound. Totally does. And here's the best part. They did it during the interview of an American war hero, which means for the record, that guy was in on it and cool with it. Manly men love wrestling. All right. Don't tell me that a Navy Cross winner, a Purple Heart winner, an American war hero isn't a manly man who I guarantee you Pat went, hey man, listen, we want to do this thing. It's a wrestling thing. Are you good with it? And that guy went, you're damn right I'm cool with it.
Yeah, 2 hours from now, I'd be interested to see how they explain it away. If
just the corpse of Pat McAfee up in the corner.
I hope it starts out as the AJ show. I just think that would be.
Pat stumbles in halfway through his own show with a gunshot wound.
Still don't think it's a gunshot wound.
It's a gunshot wound.
It's a sledgehammer. It just caught the corner.
Yeah, that's how sledgehammers work.
I haven't hit anybody in the head with a sledgehammer, nor do I plan to, but it does have corners on it. I'm just saying. All right, the next thing is X-ing is Shane McMahon, sticking with wrestling.
Shane O'Mac trending.
Wait, if you don't know.
I have no idea.
All right, supposedly Shane McMahon put out feelers to AEW to be a wrestler. That's what it's
Stop
all over.
It.
It's all over the internet right now. I don't know if it's true or not.
But so VKM has been divested of his WWE holdings, but I don't believe Steph and Shano have. He should still have.
No, I think he gave up his shares a long time ago and went separate ways. When he came back as just a talent.
Just a talent?
Yeah, I believe so.
I was under the impression he was still invested. And if he's not, like, dope, okay. But can I just say, much like Jeff Hardy, Shane O, you're my guy, big fan. You caused some of the biggest pops of my wrestling fandom over the years. But dude, we don't need this anymore. Okay?
Listen, if he's going to fit anywhere with his wrestling style, AEW, he would definitely fit.
Yeah, but it's not so much about the style of the fit.
He'd be competing with Darby Allin, seeing who would die first.
Right. It's not about the style of the fit. It's about the ability. Shano's like 54, 53 years old.
He's younger than that. I think he's probably 50.
Zoe, can you do anything you could do in your 30s?
Well, you know.
Okay, not like that, you pervert. Not like that. Zoe is just dirty today, man.
What?
I was dirty.
I meant wrestling.
Yeah.
Okay, bro.
I don't know. What are you doing, man?
I'm fine. I'm corrupting Lonzo year by year.
What is wrong with you?
I'm going home to watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit. That's what I'm doing. Hey, that's it. The week's over. Just like that. Y'all have a spectacular weekend. Do not drink and drive. I'll punch you right square in the nose. All right? Hope you enjoy your weekend. Thank you for being here. We'll be back Monday. We'll try this whole thing again, and we'll see what happened. Have a lovely rest of your day. He's Lonzo. I'm Rob. See you back here Monday on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate later. Yeah! Show on the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show back on the radio. It is the Fan Upstate.
I just want to say Lola Bunny was hot, but she was no Jessica Rabbit.
Listen. I think all of us, you know what? Let's just get weird. It's Friday. Who the hell cares, right? I think.
And even if they do care.
It doesn't matter anymore. We've been doing this for 4.5 years at this point. Lonzo and I for 3.5 years at this point. It just is what it is now. All of us had, I don't care your age. I think all of us had, that woman that made something awaken in you as a young man, all right?
You're talking about your need for love.
No, I'm not.
So you're about to be graphic. I think you can talk about, wow.
You know what I mean.
Wow, we do now.
You know what I mean. I think all of us had that woman that for the first time you went, something interesting is happening. And for a lot of
you. If you heard that voice when something interesting happened, you definitely are a major nerd. I'm just, not that there's anything wrong with that, but.
The Force Awakens, it does.
Oh, please.
And for a disturbing number of y'all, that woman was animated, okay? The obsession on the internet with Lola Bunny from Toon Squad, from Space Jam, is alarming, at the least. Jessica Rabbit's totally understandable, though. All right? She's not bad. She's just drawn that way.
She was just drawn that way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Can we be straight up, though? Jessica Rabbit was straight up top-notch wife material, right? Like, all the temptation in the world, and she never stopped fighting for Roger Rabbit. Never stopped going to bat for her husband, Raj.
All right, Steven, on the stream.
Betty Boop.
It's Boop.
Yeah, not Betty Boop.
That's not. Yeah, that's not.
Betty Boop.
Maybe you've always thought it was that, but it's not that.
Betty Boop.
I hope that was autocorrect, which makes it even funnier, but you know.
All right. We talked about that baseball game earlier because I have come to the realization that even though I thought that conversation could go way out of the left field, as soon as I brought up Jessica Rabbit, I'm like, no, this is going to get even too weird for this show. All right. And this show gets weird all the time.
It's not too weird. I guess you've never seen the animated movie back in the day, Heavy Metal.
I did not, but I saw the South Park parody of it, and I can get the gist.
Okay.
I can get the gist. All right. Like, again. For a lot of the straight fellas out there, there was a woman who awoke that side of you at some point.
Well, you're just strictly talking animated right now, though.
No. I think for a lot of guys, there probably was that woman that for the first time awoke something in you.
Come on, Tommy. It's not Wilma. It's Betty, man. I know the redhead. I get it.
Yeah, Betty Rubble.
Yeah, but Betty, I mean.
Barney outkicked his coverage by a million miles. So did Fred. Both of those cats outkicked their coverage by a million miles. But Betty Rubble was the better of the two.
Because she had the sexier voice. I'm just saying.
For sure. Yeah. And listen, it has been made no secret that, like, in his history, Rob's had a history of redheads. All right. But Betty Rubble was the play betwixt those two. I think everybody had that woman that made The Force Awaken for the first time. And for a lot of y'all, it was somebody that was animated. Jessica Rabbit, Lola Bunny, you know, add your Tinkerbell, all right? I'm not going to lie. Rob Brown loved him some Tinkerbell.
You guys are weird with the Tinkerbell thing.
How is that weird?
It just is. She's like 2 inches tall.
I know. But then Julia Roberts made her not 2 inches tall.
Yeah, but see, we were just talking.
And a whole lot of us were like.
Talking about animated. Now you're switching from animated.
No, I'm not talking about animated. I am saying that.
The whole conversation stemmed from animated.
No. The conversation stemmed from.
You can change it if you
want. No, I'm not.
Your name's on the show.
The conversation started with a lot of us had that woman that did that thing to us for the first time.
And then we just talked about animated.
And for an alarming number of American men, that first woman was animated. Not exclusively, all right? Not exclusively. It may have been Pam Anderson on the Baywatch poster that did it for you the first time. I'm blanking on her name. What was the chick that everybody, Farrah Fawcett, may have done it for a lot of
you're
y'all.
You're blank because you weren't alive then.
Farrah Fawcett was pre my time, but I'm going to
tell you. Charlie's Angels, yes.
Ladies, if y'all would like to bring back the winged fluffed haircut.
I did like the hair.
I'm on board.
I did.
All right? I'm on board.
The hair.
What's the other chick that was on the poster? Princess Leia did it for like an entire generation of men back in the 70s. Young men back in the 70s.
You're into short girls, yeah.
Hey, whatever. All right, whatever you're into. The first time Princess Leia showed up on a screen in space with no underoos, a lot of y'all had The Force Awakened for the first time. Sorry to keep going back to that phrase, but it's obviously very appropriate here.
No, you're so glad that you coined it.
I really am.
And now you just want to say really it as many times as you can.
I really am. Keegan said the mechanic chick and the princess from Journey to Atlantis, the animated movie. Yeah. Yeah.
I think I saw that.
What's the chick's name from El Dorado? Y'all know what I'm talking about.
All right.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. I can't remember her name. But the chick from El Dorado, Shell did it for a lot. Like, there's generations of these animated chicks
now
that,
you're
like.
You're going to throw in, like, Pocahontas and, yeah.
Eh, I mean. I'm going to tell you, weird one for me. Belle. You telling me?
Yeah, because she's
a huge dork.
Yeah, intelligent, all those things for sure.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right. So don't tell me I'm alone in this. I know I'm not. I know I'm not. Because if it wasn't true, they wouldn't keep making animated chicks hot for 1,000 years. And they have since the inception of animation.
Jasmine from Aladdin.
Yes. I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T. Like, yeah, absolutely. Right? They wouldn't keep doing it if it didn't work. There was no need in a children's movie to put Jasmine in a belly shirt. They did it for a reason, and it ain't because of the kids.
Well, because, you know, it was the fashion of the day and the place where they were, but she seemed to be one of the only people.
Yes, because we know Disney is super authentic to the history of the stories, mm-hmm. for sure, which is why they made Pocahontas 9 years old in that movie.
She was not 9 years
old. She was like 9 to 10 years old when she met John Smith. Absolutely. That's part of the reason that a lot of people were mad about the movie. It's like, that's not really how it went, my guys, right? But that's not how we roll. So the point here is, it's weird. I acknowledge it's weird, but it ain't uncommon, or else they'd stop doing it.
All right, Sleeping Beauty, not bad.
Yeah, but also when that movie dropped, it was a little different. You couldn't really have a chick in a belly shirt.
How about Ariel?
Ain't no reason for her to be wearing C-cups. See what I did there? C-S-E-A cups?
Okay.
S-E-A
cups? They were actually C-shells.
Right, but they were C-cups in that movie.
Well, I guess. If you look at it from that point of view, I suppose.
But yes, you are correct. Absolutely no need to go that hard in the paint on the animation style. And I know a lot of people are going, Rob, you absolute bleeping weirdo. And that is fine, but I'm not wrong. That's why Jessica Rabbit looked like Jessica Rabbit. That is why in 2024... When that movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit came out in what year, Alonzo? 1991? 2? Apparently 88. I'm older than I thought. In 1988, when that movie came out, It is 2024, and y'all still didn't know exactly know who the hell Jessica Rabbit is. And it ain't because Who Framed Roger Rabbit is up there with Tombstone on the most rewatched movies.
It was it was groundbreaking animation because there was live action.
And Christopher Lloyd was terrifying in that movie.
He was, especially when you found
out that
he was...
That poor shoe.
Yeah, it was not good.
That movie was so good, I felt bad for an animated shoe. That's how good that movie was, all right? But still, 1988, the same year that Michael Jordan was unjustifiably awarded Defensive Player of the Year in the NBA, hashtag callback, hashtag wow. I'm good at this.
Look at how he tied that in. That was awesome.
And y'all still know who Jessica Rabbit is, for a reason. Texture says, the girl from Hercules. Her name would be Megara, and you're damn right. You're second to Belle, actually maybe above Belle. On the Rob Brown list of animated women.
She was kind of a bad girl?
She was a complete badass in that movie, right? And then eventually, she fell in love. No way, no how, I won't say I'm in love. Banger of a Disney song. Underrated, underappreciated. Should be on your playlist on Spotify. And that was the moment that it's like, yo, if you get a good bad girl, you have won the game, my man. Megara. Way up there, for sure. My point is, as a youngster, we all had, and I'm going even back, even y'all, old heads, I know you're listening, and I know you're like, this kid's a weirdo, get him the hell off my radio, but do not lie to me. There was a Betty Boop back in your day.
Boop.
Thanks, Steven. I'm never going to not see that. There was a Betty Boop back in your day that came on your television screen back when, like, the remote was like a dial on the TV, right? That you looked at and little something changed in your mind. A little something changed in your brain. You know it's true. You know I'm right. Don't be shocked if Jessica Rabbit's trending tomorrow.
Hey, I'm starring as my favorite segment of the day. All right. What the X is going on with the Pat McAfee show, Rob? Are they all dead? Is it the AJ show now, as people are speculating, because AJ wasn't there, you know, he's live from Ohio and stream.
Can I tell you how much I love this? For those of you that know what's going on, if you're not a wrestling fan, this is going to get lost on you. If you're not a wrestling fan, deal with it for like 60 more seconds.
If you're not one, you should
still
be.
Listen. Yeah, but so yesterday Pat McAfee's doing a show, but he's interviewing like a former Navy SEAL who won like the Navy Cross and a real legit American hero. And then, though they never showed it, it was implied that the Wyatt Six showed up and took over because they did the power going. Because we all know when you turn a light switch off, you hear it go.
Here's the thing. They were talking about it earlier in the show.
Sure.
Because I saw them talking about it. And you know, they clipped in clips. So I saw that clip and I was like, oh, okay. And they were really, really talking in depth for like 10 minutes about it. And then this happened.
Yeah. And of course, again, as you know, when you turn the power off, it goes.
That's how around here for sure.
Yeah, like I went the other day and I turned the circuit breaker off to the entire house just to see if it made that sound. Totally does. And here's the best part. They did it during the interview of an American war hero, which means for the record, that guy was in on it and cool with it. Manly men love wrestling. All right. Don't tell me that a Navy Cross winner, a Purple Heart winner, an American war hero isn't a manly man who I guarantee you Pat went, hey man, listen, we want to do this thing. It's a wrestling thing. Are you good with it? And that guy went, you're damn right I'm cool with it.
Yeah, 2 hours from now, I'd be interested to see how they explain it away. If
just the corpse of Pat McAfee up in the corner.
I hope it starts out as the AJ show. I just think that would be.
Pat stumbles in halfway through his own show with a gunshot wound.
Still don't think it's a gunshot wound.
It's a gunshot wound.
It's a sledgehammer. It just caught the corner.
Yeah, that's how sledgehammers work.
I haven't hit anybody in the head with a sledgehammer, nor do I plan to, but it does have corners on it. I'm just saying. All right, the next thing is X-ing is Shane McMahon sticking with wrestling.
Shane O'Mac trending.
Wait, if you don't know.
I have no idea.
All right, supposedly Shane McMahon put out feelers to AEW to be a wrestler. That's what it's Stop all over. It. It's all over the internet right now. I don't know if it's true or not.
But so VKM has been divested of his WWE holdings, but I don't believe Steph and Shano have. He should still have.
No, I think he gave up his shares a long time ago and went separate ways. When he came back as just a talent.
Just a talent?
Yeah, I believe so.
I was under the impression he was still invested. And if he's not, like, dope, okay. But can I just say, much like Jeff Hardy, Shane O, you're my guy, big fan. You caused some of the biggest pops of my wrestling fandom over the years. But dude, we don't need this anymore. Okay?
Listen, if he's going to fit anywhere with his wrestling style, AEW, he would definitely fit.
Yeah, it's not so much about the style of the fit.
He'd be competing with Darby Allin, seeing who would die first.
Right. It's not about the style of the fit. It's about the ability. Shane O's like 54, 53 years old.
He's younger than that. I think he's probably 50.
Zoe, can you do anything you could do in your 30s?
Well, you know.
Okay, not like that, you pervert. Not like that. Zoe is just dirty today, man.
What?
I was dirty.
I meant wrestling.
Yeah.
Okay, bro.
I don't know. What are you doing, man?
I'm fine. I'm corrupting Lonzo year by year. That's
what is wrong with you?
I'm going home to watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit. That's what I'm doing. Hey, that's it. The week's over. Just like that. Y'all have a spectacular weekend. Do not drink and drive. I'll punch you right square in the nose. All right. Hope you enjoy your weekend. Thank you for being here. We'll be back Monday. We'll try this whole thing again and we'll see what happened. Have a lovely rest of your day. He's Lonzo. I'm Rob. See you back here Monday on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate later. Yeah!